The trouble is that touching cats or touching what they leave behind can also make you understand what unhappiness is. Diseases transmitted by cats cost the Australian economy more than $6 billion annually through their impact on human health and livestock production as well. Professor Sarah Legg is in the College of Science at the Australian National University in Canberra. Her interests include environmental science and management. Good morning.
Morning, Jim.
We turn a blind eye to what cats carry, don't we? I mean, we have a cat at home, just speaking personally. I'm guessing you might not own a cat.
I don't own a cat now, but I have owned a cat in the past, three different cats, and they're fantastic pets.
Okay. So that puts us in the sympathetic camp, but even so. We know that cats can carry COVID more than dogs do, but there's a long list, isn't there? Campylobacter tapeworms, hookworms, Giardia, fleas, and Staphylococcus. But these ones I've just mentioned, apart from COVID, don't cost the economy that much, I'm assuming. So where is the big economic cost coming from cats?
Well, all of those sorts of diseases that you mentioned, sure, they're carried by cats, but they're carried by lots of other animals too.
Sure.
But what we've done in our recent work was focus in on the diseases that are caused by pathogens that rely on cats for part of their life cycle. So theoretically, if cats weren't there, the pathogens and the diseases they cause wouldn't be either. You know, that's particularly interesting for countries like Australia and New Zealand, where cats are introduced. Toxoplasma gondii is one of the parasites that depend on cats for part of their life cycle. And it's one of the most widespread pathogens in the world. So globally, about 30% of people carry the parasite. In Australia, it's about the same rate. I don't know off the top of my head what the rate of infection in people in New Zealand are, but it sounds like from what you've said, it could be a bit higher.
Catching that off a cat, you can't catch it off the fur, can you, Sarah?
Not so likely. So the way you catch it is that the pathogen releases millions of eggs in the cat feces when the cat's first infected with the parasite. And these eggs are really resistant, so they can persist in the environment for many months. And they're everywhere. They're in soil, bits of dust. So if you go out gardening and it's a place where cats go to have a poo, then, you know, if the cat was infected, there could be toxoesis eggs in that garden soil. So you can just pick up the eggs from almost any surface that they get onto. You could pick them off cat fur, I suppose, but more likely to pick it up from gardens, sand pits, you know, that sort of contact.
So wear gloves. I'm sorry to ask you such nuts and bolts questions, but for example, would you have to have your mouth open while gardening? I'm just curious about the transmission.
There have been cases where these eggs are inhaled in dust, but more likely you get some contaminated material on your hands, and then, you know, you touch your face, suck your thumb, whatever, and you ingest the egg. That's one route. The other route for getting infected is to eat infected meat. So, you know, we can pick up the eggs, but so can sheep and cattle. And the parasite ends up in the meat of those livestock. And if we eat that infected meat and it hasn't been cooked thoroughly enough to kill the parasite, we can get infected that way as well. All up, in Australia, we calculated or estimated that the annual cost from these diseases, most of which comes about from the impacts of toxoplasma, is $6 billion. Most of that's impacts on human health, but there's a big bill for the agricultural sector as well.
$6 billion is a huge amount of money, and it would be a large sum of money in New Zealand as well, perhaps not as much among the human population, but certainly among livestock. This is a big economic cost to a country.
Yeah, it is. And it comes from a range of different pathways. So, you know, most people, when they get infected with toxoplasma, don't actually have any symptoms. So 90% of people wouldn't have any symptoms at all. The unlucky 10% usually pass the illness off as something else because it's just general flu-like symptoms. But a proportion of them get very sick and end up in hospital. And so they tend to be people who are immunocompromised in some way. So cancer patients, transplant patients. Before people cottoned on to what was going on, toxoplasma was actually the biggest cause of death in AIDS patients.
Gee.
And then on top of that, if a woman gets infected by toxoplasma for the first time while she's pregnant, there's a risk that the infection crosses the placenta and causes miscarriage or congenital defects. Now, the incidence of that is quite low, but the impacts, of course, are terrible for the families, and they're lifelong. So affected babies can have impairments to their vision, to hearing, and have intellectual disabilities. So, you know, again, it's not a common thing, but the costs of it emotionally and in terms of dollar value are very large. But probably the biggest cost of toxoplasma is on these subtle effects that it has to our behavior and our mental health. So even if you're completely asymptomatic in every other way, if you carry these infections, or the longer you carry these infections, the more you can experience subtle behavioral changes. So in particular, people have signs of slower reaction times, slightly higher risk-taking behavior. And that's probably why people who are involved in accidents, workplace accidents and car accidents, are more likely to carry the toxoplasma infection. And obviously, road trauma is a very expensive cost to the economy. So, you know, the fact that the parasite is contributing to that cost is part of the bill.
Toxoplasmosis cysts stay inside you for life, do they? Do they stop manifesting, though, at some point?
They stay inside you for life. They usually insist somewhere up in the head, in the brain. And so that's, you know, obviously there's a kind of a plausible link there between where they're lodging and effects on your behavior and your mood. They usually stay there, insisted, for your whole life, unless you have something happen to you that causes your immune system to be compromised, and then you can get kind of an outbreak of the parasite. You know, it'll come out of its cysts and migrate through your body again, but that's rare.
Is it easily diagnosed, and how can it be treated?
Yes, it can be diagnosed by picking up markers in your blood. It's not easy to treat. I mean, the fact that it's sitting in cysts with thick walls makes it difficult to treat. But you can suppress some of the consequences in terms of illness. So in some countries, pregnant women are screened early in pregnancy to identify women that are vulnerable to a new infection. And if they pick up a toxoplasma infection during pregnancy, they can be given a cocktail of drugs to suppress the effects and reduce the risk of it crossing the placenta. But, you know, the treatments are... as I say, they don't get rid of the parasite completely, and they're quite complex, so they're not used as a general rule.
I know you're a scientist, not a medical doctor, but it would strike me as being desirable. I know everybody can't rush to the doctor and say, can you give me a toxoplasmosis test, but it would probably be desirable if more people inquired into how they're feeling if they're not feeling up to things and suspect they might have been infected.
Yeah, well, particularly if you're high risk, you know, if you're pregnant or thinking about trying for a family, or you're immunocompromised, or, you know, if you're in those sorts of categories, you'd want to avoid or be ready to take action if toxoplasma symptoms manifested, I think.
So the cost of medical care, the effects of traffic accidents, all those things are part of your $6 billion estimate, aren't they?
Yeah, that's right. And so, you know, we could only attempt this for the parts of the manifestations of the disease that are better documented and where there are some costs available. So, you know, we looked at costs from getting sick when you're infected, from congenital transmission, costs due to traffic accidents, costs due to schizophrenia. The rates of schizophrenia are elevated in people with toxo. And the cost associated with suicide and suicide attempts. But toxoplasma has many more effects. So it's also been associated with higher rates of bipolar disorder and various other mental health conditions. There's more recent data that's at the moment less strong, but is relating toxoplasma infection to things like brain cancer. So, you know, there's a whole myriad of effects. We looked at part of that story and came to $6 billion, but the real figure could be higher.
Professor Sarah Legg is with us. And not to sound alarmist, but you're describing a kind of epidemic, really, a kind of silent epidemic among the general population, often with mild effects, but obviously sometimes not. But it sounds worrying.
Yeah, it's. I think particularly the consequences of the infection on your mental health is probably the thing that I find most scary about this parasite. But you know, there are things, although it's a difficult parasite to treat, there are definitely things that we can do to limit transmission and reduce the risk of infection, and that's probably the place to start. I mean, a lot of the countries that have screening programs for pregnant women have actually got the rate of congenital infection, for example, down quite strongly with that approach. So there's definitely things we can do.
Like wear gloves when you're gardening is the first thing that jumps to my mind.
Yeah. When you're in the garden or just if you're getting soil on your hand for whatever reason, think about the hygiene. So wear gloves, wash your hands, cook meat properly. And don't let cats have access to places where you're going to be doing activities like that. So don't let cats into children's sand pits. They're a terrible hotspot for Toxoplasma eggs. And don't let cats into your garden. Don't have feral cats around farms, because if feral cats aren't pooing in the pastures where livestock are, then livestock are less likely to pick up the parasite.
We should say at this juncture that, you know, cats are loved and they provide comfort and so on for people who are cat lovers. I was reading, but nevertheless, I was reading that when rats and mice, Sarah, eat infected cat poo, it can make the rodents reckless and they may end up getting eaten because of that. And it's a very cunning parasite, it sounds like, because it finds its way inside cats by hook or by crook, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, the evolutionary reason we think that this parasite does affect the behavior of its secondary host is because it needs to end up back in a cat, not just domestic pet cat, but anything in the cat family. The parasite can complete its life cycle in any member of the cat family. So it needs to be eaten by, it needs to make its intermediate host eaten by a cat, either because the cat kills it or the cat eats it as carrion. So that's why it causes behavior that, such as increased risk-taking and reduced response times. And it does other weird things too. So rodents infected with toxoplasma change. So without the infection, they are have adverse reactions to the smell or the presence of cat urine. When they carry the parasite, they're attracted to cat urine. And there was a really fascinating study carried out with people where they compared people's attraction to the smell of cat urine and then look to see whether they had toxoplasma infections or not. And they found that men in particular who were carrying toxoplasma found cat urine quite pleasant, whereas if men weren't carrying the infection, they found it repulsive. So that was quite interesting study.
That's an interesting study and a fascinating rule of thumb. Okay, you mentioned it can make humans reckless, so you might become a more careless driver potentially, or you might even pick a fight with a bouncer at the club, that kind of recklessness?
Yeah, that kind of recklessness, but it's probably extremely subtle. And it's not that, I'm not suggesting that there's a person sort of trundling through their life, they get infected with a parasite and then they suddenly turn into like a Jekyll and Hyde type situation. It's not like that. It would be very subtle. And you pick up these effects by looking across, you know, large samples of people. So, you know, people shouldn't be alarmed that they're going to change personality when they get infected. It doesn't work like that.
No. And just to clarify, although the cysts sit inside you forever, presumably they can go into abeyance. You know, you talk about a subtle effect, but quite possibly there is no effect for long periods of time until maybe you get sick or develop an immune condition or something.
Yeah, certainly when the physical illnesses, if you've got a latent infection sitting in cysts, you'll probably experience no symptoms at all unless you're unlucky enough to have something else happen to you, like, say, cancer. And then you might get sick with toxoplasma symptoms again.
All right. One more thing. In the end, because you mentioned not letting cats into your garden, this has been a big topic in New Zealand, probably is in Australia too. But in the end, keeping cats indoors is obviously just felt by a whole lot of people to be too cruel to the cats, Sarah.
I don't think that's the prevailing view in Australia. So lots of cat owners here keep their pet cats indoors. And there's been a lot of research looking at, I guess, the health and well-being of cats that are kept indoors. And there's no reason at all for people to think that an indoor cat is suffering. It's actually quite the opposite. And in fact, indoor cats, on average, live longer and healthier lives. So they're much less, they're not going to get hit by a car. They're not going to get lost, get involved in fights and get injuries that way. They're much less likely to pick up disease. In the context of what we're talking about now, they're much less likely to pick up diseases that they bring home to their cat owners. So I guess I would encourage pet cat owners to consider keeping their cats indoors. I think it's better for the cat. If you look after the cat well indoors and give it plenty of behavioral enrichment, it's going to be fine. It won't get sick. You won't lose it early to a car hit. And the chances of your cat picking up a disease and passing it to you and your family are much smaller.
So you'll never own a cat again, do you reckon?
Well, I wouldn't say never, but I love cats. I think they're fantastic. I'd consider keeping a cat again, but if I did have one, I'd be keeping it indoors.
Okay. Interesting research, and very good of you to talk to us today on it. Thank you so much.
My pleasure, Jim.
Professor Sarah Legg.